So I got two confessions to make. Confession number one. This is a little uncomfortable. When I've done this in the past and moved the pulpit, I mean, I've had a communion table here, or sometimes a boat, or sometimes there are some other things, but now there's nothing. And that makes me feel a little vulnerable. And there's a cord right here that I'm not going to trip over, I swear. Confession number two, that picture. You've seen it in the bulletin a few times over the past few weeks. It's on the front of your bulletin this week. And you know what? That's what my faith life looks like a lot of times. I mean, I desperately want to be all in. I try to say the right things. I try to do the right things. I even try to think the right things. But let's face it. In the end, my faith life, well, it's kind of like a Dunkin' Donut. Here's what I mean by that. Really, really, really sweet on the edges, but in the end, there's a great big hole right in the middle. So I've been doing this church thing now for about 40 years, and that just makes me feel old to say this. I came to Christ when I was 11 years old, and now I'm 51, getting ready to turn 52 in about a month. Actually, about a month. I've been at this a long time. And so I've been trying to fill that hole in my faith life for over 40 years now. And I tried it all, folks. I've tried prayer. I've tried to read my Bible. I've tried to get involved in ministry. You name it, I've tried it. And you know what I've become? I'm an addict. I am addicted to trying to fill the hole. And you know what? Done it. And that discourages me. I mean, I've been at this for 40 years and still, I mean, sometimes it's a little hole and sometimes it's a big hole, but you know, the hole just never seems to get all filled. And I know it's got to be me. I know there's got to be something that I am missing, because Jesus tells us in John chapter 10, verse 10, I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. No hole. It's supposed to somehow complete me. It's supposed to somehow fix everything in my life. And so that has kind of been what this wacky year of 2020 has been all about. And it has been a crazy year. I mean, it's been a crazy year from the perspective of how we do church, to what we're doing at church, to what we're going to do in the building, to how we're going to preach things, to how things are going. It's just been totally crazy. But all throughout this, we have been looking at this idea of living faith. Now, if that term means nothing to you, either you've been asleep for the first 8 months of this year, or you're new here. So let me just kind of tell you what living faith is. Living faith is not about faith that you live, but faith that can be lived out in the world. And you know, there is a great big difference. There is a great big difference. And so we set out this year trying to find the difference, and we began with this little church in Ephesus that we find in Revelation chapter 2, verse 4, and Jesus has a problem with this very busy church. Yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your love you had at first. The church at Ephesus had a lot going for it, but it was missing something. Something that happened over the years, and Jesus agreed with them, in fact, that, hey, you're a great church. You're doing a lot of good things. You're doing a lot of things you should, but this thing that you're missing, this thing that's not with you anymore, it makes all the difference between just doing church and having living faith. So he gives them some advice. The Dear Abbey column for Jesus, consider how far you have fallen. Repent and do the things you did at first. So go back to the beginning, go back to the start of the relationship, go back and figure out that thing that really made you say, why do I want to get in this relationship with Jesus? Why is that? And it's because what? We started out with a love affair of Jesus. I mean, I didn't get into this church thing because, you know what, somebody told me I had to do this, that. It was because I met this guy named Jesus, and he was incredible, and I wanted to know more about him. Now, you have to realize, though, this was not just advice from Jesus. Jesus was actually giving them a command. Because in that command, he says, this is do or die. This is what he says. If you do not repent, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place. So you understand, if you can't repent, if you can't change, if you won't come back, the relationship is over. not going to work this way. You can't stay where you are forever. So we have set out a quest in 2020, and let me just kind of catch you up on where we are. We started in the book of Jeremiah, which is the prophet in the Old Testament who had this call to the land of Israel to come back to repentance, to a real relationship. And we had all the object lessons that Jeremiah did, and we did all of those object lessons here on the stage. And I'll let you see what it is that God wants you to come back to a real meaningful relationship. Then we just finished up a block of sermons that were all about Jesus. We did the Easter experience that kind of talked about what did Jesus do. We did the day I met Jesus, which is all about how do we come to Jesus. We did the Father of the Bride, which tells us what the relationship is really supposed to look like. And then we did Jesus tweets, where we talked about what did Jesus say? What did Jesus say about my life? And well, we're not going to stop talking about Jesus, but we are going to switch gears just a little bit. We're going to enter into a block of sermons that are going to be all about our faith. We're going to start with this idea of something is missing. Then after that, we're going to go and look at four fantastic foundations of faith, my personal faith. And then we're going to finish up heading to Christmas with this thing called smart faith. So this is where we're headed, because we're going to end this year of living faith, not talking just about Jesus, talking about your faith. What does it mean to you? And so I guess you want to know, what is this sermon really going to be all about? What are we going to do in this series? Because we have an objective. And our objective, in the end, I want to fill the hole. That's a lofty goal. I've been at this for 40 years. I want to fill the hole. And I don't want to just fill it with change activities. I want to fill that hole with change attitudes, namely my attitude. My attitude toward my relationship with Jesus has to change. You see, we're going to do this by looking at lives in Scripture that had these missing things, these things that the something that's missing, they had them, and we're going to look at them so we can understand what they are. Now, I do want to warn you, this may be a little bit of a rerun series for some of you, because some of the clips I'm going to use, I have used here before, but that's okay. Sometimes repetition is the mother of learning. But the question is isn't this something missing? Where do we start? How about we let these guys help us out?
Jesus, I just don't trust you.
You don't trust me?
No, I mean, I want to trust you, I just don't.
I have an exercise that I think will really help.
Oh, okay.
Stand here and face this direction. Now, do you trust me?
No, I just said I don't trust you.
This is all part of the exercise. All right.
Okay.
Whenever I ask you if you trust me, you say, yes, Jesus, I trust you.
Even though I don't.
It's practice.
Okay.
So, do you trust me?
Yes, Jesus, I trust you.
Now, fall back.
Are you going to catch me?
Don't worry about that.
Okay, that's the part I'm worried about.
You can do this, okay? Just trust me.
Trust you.
Fall back.
Okay, well, Jesus, I trust you.
There you go.
Okay.
Let's try this again. Just face this direction and keep your feet planted. All right? Do you trust me?
Yes, Jesus, I trust you.
Now, fall back.
Okay. I'm going to do it.
All right.
I'm really going to do it.
Good. Especially when you do it.
Seriously?
Of course.
Okay, Jesus, I don't know if you noticed this, but there is nobody over there.
I know it looks that way to you.
It looks that way. It is that way.
You can do this, Laura. Just trust me and fall back.
Jesus, I can't do that.
We can do it together.
I can't.
You can.
I won't.
Don't worry. I didn't move the pulpit so we can have a little object lesson. We're not doing the trust fall. Trust me, I don't have the back to catch me, and you don't to catch you, and you don't want me to try. But I have a question. Could you do it? Could you just take your life and just spread out your arms and just fall back into Jesus when you can see nothing behind you to catch you? Now, I can't answer that question for you. I can answer it for me, and I'll be very honest with you. I don't know if I could. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's what I'm missing. Because I want to trust my eyes. I want to trust my logic. I want to trust my senses. I want to trust all the things that just make common sense to me, that you just don't fall back when there's nothing there to catch you, right? I mean, you at least need a bed or a pillow, right? Something to make the landing just a little bit more cushy. Interesting enough, when Jesus was trying to do the object lesson for teaching Laura trust, he began at level 1, and then he went to level 2. You ever thought about what level 3 might have looked like? If she had trusted him to fall back, what would he have done next? How far was he willing to push her? But you know what? I admire Laura, because she was very honest. She didn't say, I can't. What did she say? I won't. I won't. Jesus, you've asked me to step too far. Jesus, I can't go there. There's a hole there, and that hole, and what's missing there is trust. So this morning, we are going to look at a man that I feel had probably the most trust of anybody in Scripture. You find his story in Genesis chapter 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and a little bit of 10. And I have good news for you. This is not a verse-by-verse sermon series on the life of Noah. But what we are going to do is I'm going to give you 12 examples of how Noah trusted God. So let me catch you up on his story a little bit. Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 through 8. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination and the thoughts of the human heart was evil all the time. Is this 2020? No. I don't think this Noah would live in 2020. All the time. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on the earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground, for I regret that I have made them. But, I love those three letters in the Bible. Those three simple letters put together, B-U-T, means that there is hope. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. So today, maybe I should have done this sermon last week when the basement was flooded, and we could have all had an object lesson. We could have went down into the water. Not, that's okay. But we all know kind of who Noah is. Noah's biggest ever thing that he did, that he's remembered for, is Noah built an ark. But that's not the thing that I want you to remember Noah for. Because, yeah, he built a boat. We'll talk about that in a minute. He had some other things he had to do. But it isn't the fact that Noah built an ark. It says that Noah found favor in God's eyes. So you've got to get the picture. God is looking out across humanity, and he sees just how wicked and how evil and what they're doing. And they're turning themselves from God, and they're worshiping creatures, and they're worshiping idols, and they're having nothing to do with God. And God just feels remorse and regret as he looks out across humanity. And there is like this one little flickering light, and his name is Noah. And the funny thing is that God never tells us what Noah was doing that was so cool. God doesn't give us the list. You know why God doesn't give us a list? Because we turn that into a list. And we say, well, if I just do these things, then my whole trust would be filled. So God doesn't give us a list. But what he does do is he tells us in verse 9, Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time. And he walked faithfully with God. Now again, it says that he was blameless. I don't think that means that he was sinless, because if you read through Noah's story, if you want to read the whole thing, you'll find out Noah had some sin issues. Okay? Noah is not sinless, but it says that he was blameless. So he was constantly bringing his sin back toward God. And it says that he was faithful in following after God. And I find that's important, because this relationship of Noah, it was built on trust. And that trust would be stretched across Noah's life as God constantly asked Noah to fall back. Can't you just see Noah? Are you going to catch me? Don't worry about that, Noah. Just Fall back. Just trust me. And so Noah's trust, believe it or not, went all the way through the before, the during, and the after of the storm of his life. And I mean, it was a doozy of a storm. You think we got problems with COVID-19 and with all the other things that are going on? Noah had problems in his world to the fact that God was going to level the whole thing, except for him. Could you imagine the weight of that man? What he was going to deal with for the next 120 years as he prepared for this mission that God had put him on? So let's take a look at how Noah trusted God. And in the before, it says Noah trusted God when nobody else did. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people of the earth had were corrupt in their ways. It's hard, isn't it? Man, when people out there are doing whatever and you want to be part of the crowd and you want to go where you want to go and you want to kind of be with the in thing and the world is doing this and the world is saying that and the world says this is okay and the world says that's okay and all of a sudden you want me to be different? You want me to make a stand? You want me to say that something is not okay? You want me to make a difference in my life? And you know what? That's the important thing. Before there was ever an ark, before the first raindrop ever fell, Noah had decided to trust God when nobody else did. Noah had placed his faith in God when it wasn't the end thing to do. It wasn't popular. It didn't like make him a big man on campus. It was just him and God. And you know what else? Noah trusted God when the news was bad. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 6, verse 13. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people. You think that maybe caught Noah's attention? All people. God, I got a lot of friends and a lot of neighbors. I got family. I got aunts. I got uncles. I got grandparents. And, you know, I got all of this. All people. For the earth is filled with violence because of them, and I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So Noah now has a choice. God comes and says, Noah, we're done with this game. The floods, they are coming. The storms, they are coming. And let me tell you something. It's not going to be good news. I don't have a happy moment for you because you know what? When this is all done, all that's going to be left is me, you, and eventually we'll talk about his immediate family, how they got there. That's it. You know, I think sometimes we hear that and when we get the bad news, we're kind of like, okay, God, this was a nice, fun event. But things are getting serious now, so I think I'm going to go back over here. I think I'm going to go and do my own life, Lord, because you know what? You're giving me that bad news. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to give me sunny news, right? It's all supposed to be rainbows and sunshine, this relationship with Christ. And you're telling me this is going to be hard? Yeah, it's going to be hard. But that's the amazing thing about Noah. Noah trusted God when the news was bad. And also, Noah trusted God when the job was too big. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 6, 14. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make your rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. So he is given the specs of this ark, and this is a very big boat. Don't think about the idea that it's kind of small. It really isn't a boat at all. If you really look at the dimensions of this thing, it's a giant cube. It's like a Borg ship from Star Trek. Okay, it's this giant cube structure that God gives him. And he says, I want you to do this, and I want you to subdivide it and all the different things, and I want you to waterproof it, and so I want you to build an ark. I don't know if Noah had ever built a boat in his entire life. I don't know if he could put a nail in straight. Obviously, he must have had some knowledge or something there because God said, I want you to build a boat. But Noah, while you're building the boat, I got another job for you. See, Noah, I want you to make a zoo. Genesis chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. Okay, so while I'm building this humongous boat, I've got to collect all these animals, and I've got to collect food to feed them, and that's a really big job. That's a huge job. And you know, sometimes I think this happens with us. God gives us the really big job, and we're like, you know what, God, this is not what I signed up for. I signed up for my comfortable seat in the pew and my parking space in the parking lot. I signed up for this to be easy, and now this has gotten complicated. And you know, we don't even get the part that Noah has something else going on in his life. See, a lot of times we paint Noah's picture, and he's got at least three adult sons that are going to help him. We forget about this thing called math. Noah became a father, according to Genesis chapter 5, verse 32, when he was 500 years old. First of all, not me. I'm done. Okay? So, Noah boarded the ark when he was 600 years old. So that means that was 100 years. So sometime that 100 years, he was 100 years, he was a father. But Noah was given 120 years to build the ark. Do the math. You know what that means? On top of building a boat, on top of starting a zoo, Noah's going to have kids and raise those kids and nurture those kids and bring those kids into maturity, all while the world around him is literally falling apart. Man, that's got to take a lot of trust, doesn't it? I mean, I'm a parent. I got two kids. I understand. Kids are hard work. They're time-consuming. They are. I love them to death, but they do. They put a pinch on your time. And God, you want me to build a boat? While I'm starting a zoo, while I've got my family that I want to, come on, God. This takes a whole lot of trust here. Noah's going to have to do some very big things. But you see, here's the thing I love about Noah. You don't get a lot of whining. You don't get a lot of complaining. You know what you get? You get Genesis chapter 6, verse 22. Noah did everything just as God commanded him. Holy smokes. You were kidding me. Not only did Noah do it, it says he did it just like God said. That's impressive. That's a lot of trust. He didn't skimp on a few inches to save some money on the materials to make that ark. You know, he didn't say, well, you know what? A cow and a deer, they're close. I'll just take the cow. They're easier to deal with. Of course, then all of our hunters would be sad, right? Because there'd be no deer. So you get it. So he didn't scrimp. He said he did everything just as God said do it. And you know what? The first raindrop hasn't even fell yet. First nail hasn't been made yet. But it says Noah committed himself. Why? Because Noah trusted God. And he just kind of fell back. So then it gets interesting. The storm begins and we get the during. And guess what? Noah's trust didn't change. Noah trusted God when it was time to move. Genesis chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. The Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. Take you with you seven pairs. Oh, wait a minute, that's more animals. It wasn't just two, so he had seven of some of them. Seven pairs of every kind of clean animal, and a male and its mate, and one pair of every kind of unclean animal, a male and its mate, and also seven pairs of every kind of bird, male and female, to keep their various kinds alive throughout the earth. 7 days from now, I will send the rain on the earth. For 40 days and 40 nights, I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made. And here it is. And Noah did all the Lord commanded him. You know, it's one thing to build this boat. One thing to go out and collect some animals and store up some food. But could you imagine after 120 years of doing this job, and God looks at him and says, hey, Noah, it's time to go. It's time to move. It's time to get on the ark. You don't think maybe Noah would have looked at God and said, you know, maybe if you just give me one more week, that person, I've been working really hard on them, God. I've been preaching day and night to them. I've been talking to them day and night. Maybe I can convince them. God, can I have just one more week? Lord, don't you think there's somebody else that can come with me? Noah's going to have to say goodbye to every human relationship he's got other than his wife and his kids. That's got to be hard. As he's looking at that ark and he's thinking, this is it. When that door opens back up and I come off of this thing, if God is who he says he is, my entire world is going to change. I'm going to be grieving the death of everybody I know. That would be a hard move to make, don't you think? I think maybe it should be at that point I look at God and say, that's a nice thought, God, but not me. I won't. God, you got the boat. You put the animals on there. Hey, you made the first version of man. You can just do man 2.0. Okay, because I won't. I'm going to stay here. But you know what? God didn't let him do it. He didn't let him walk away. And Noah got on that boat. And Noah trusted God during the storm. Genesis chapter 7, verses 13 through 14. Excuse me, Noah trusted God with his future. I skipped one. See, this is where I have to come up. Noah trusted God with his future. On that very day, Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, so he didn't just have one kid in those 100, he's got three kids he's trying to raise, together with his wives and the wives of his three sons, so that means that his sons now have, so we've got those relationships that he's had to deal with, enter the ark. They had with them every wild animal according to its kind, all the livestock according to their kinds, every creature that moves along the ground according to its kind, and every bird according to its kind, everything with wings. Noah put his entire future on that boat. Noah didn't say, well, God, I'm going to come with you, but in case you're wrong, God, and this rain isn't going to happen, I don't want my kids to look like a bunch of fools sitting on a boat, so I'm going to leave my kids out here, but I'm going to get... No, what did he say? It says that the kids came with him. Now, I don't know whether it's kind of like it is when your kids, and I mean, they're 100 years old, so I guess maybe they're making their own decisions by now. They're married. But you know what? That means that while Noah was building the boat and raising the kids and making the zoo, that he also had to teach his kids to have reverence for God because they had to get on that boat willingly too. Oh my gosh. That's a really big job. Teaching your kids to follow God while I'm very busy doing ministry. God, that's a big job. But it says Noah successfully did that, and he placed his entire future, his entire trust was placed with God. And the rain began to come. And Noah continued trusting. Genesis chapter 7, verse 17, for 40 days the flood kept coming on earth. And as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated. Well, I bet you that was good news on Noah. It actually floats. It floated on the surface of the water. Now, we have 40 days there, but this was not a month adventure for Noah. This was not a cruise ship. Oh, no. Verse 7:24 says, the waters flooded the earth for 150 days. So we're either talking somewhere around 200 to 150 days. Noah's trapped. You talk about self-quarantine? Noah's trapped in this ark with a bunch of wild animals. And you know, in God's design, and I read back through Genesis to make sure, in God's design for this boat, he left out two very important things. Well, okay, they weren't important to him, but they would have been important to me. There are no specifications for a rudder, and there are no specifications for a wheel. Now, why is that important? Because as that ark began to rise, guess what? Noah had no control. They were adrift and just kind of out there and just kind of floating along and just kind of going. And wherever God decided to take the boat, that's where the boat was going to go. And wherever God decided to move the boat, that's where the boat was going to go. And when the waters left, wherever God decided to leave Noah, that's where Noah was going to be. You don't think Noah had some trust? I would have at least asked God, look, when you park it, could you make it maybe where the weather's warm? If my wife was with us, could you make it near the beach? You know, he didn't put any, he just kind of got on the boat, and he had no idea where it was going to wind up. Because you know what? Noah trusted God during the storm. And here's the really, really cool thing about Noah. Noah trusted God when it seemed God was nowhere to be found. Listen to Genesis chapter 8, verse 1. But God remembered Noah. Oh my gosh, I hope God didn't forget all about Noah. But in Noah's mind, think about it. In that boat with all those animals, in Noah's mind, where did God go? But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him in the ark, and he sent a wind over the earth, and the waters receded. So even in the moment when all Noah's got is rainy, dreary days, and he peeks out the little window he built, and he sees out there, and he looks at it, and you know what? All he sees is rain. All he sees is water. All he sees is storm. All he sees is more water. All he sees is rain. And I'm sure he's making little ticks on the side of the wall saying, okay, well, that's one day. That's 2 days. That's 3 days. Okay, God, I'm getting tired of this. When will this quarantine end? Come on. When are we done? I'm sure by now the animal's getting stinky. Maybe Noah wants to wear a mask. but he's trapped. But he just keeps on trusting, even when it doesn't say God's really saying anything to him at this point. God just set him afloat and just let the world happen. So what about the after? Flood is done. Waters are going down. Where did Noah's trust go? Well, here's the cool thing about Noah. Noah trusted God when the answer was no. You know, that's usually the point at which I say, you know what, God? I don't think so. I won't. I'm going to walk away. Not Noah. After 40 days, Noah opened the window and he had made in the ark and sent out a raven. It kept flying back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find nowhere to perch because there was water all over the surface of the earth. So it returned to Noah in the ark. He reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. Now I want you to really think about something for a moment. God did not have to wait for the water to dry. No, God could have done something really cool. He could have let the rain in, and he could have just like, and then you know what? Water's gone. Come on out, Noah. But Noah's sitting there, and he's waited, and he's heard that wind blow in, and he feels the boat kind of going down some, and he says, well, surely it's time. So he sends out a raven. The raven can't find anywhere. And he sends out a dove, and well, the dove can't find anywhere. So what does Noah have to do? Just keep trusting God. Because you know what? Noah, it's not time. It's not time to come out. You just have to trust me on this. You do not want to be out right now because we're still cleaning things up out here. Could you imagine what it would have been like if Noah had gotten impatient? If Noah had lived during COVID-19, I got a feeling he'd probably still be okay with being quarantined because he's like, you know what? You guys ain't got nothing on me. Try it when your boat is moving. At least yours is sitting still. He would have trusted God. He would have just kept on trusting. And you know what? Noah is bad enough, but then Noah continued to ask God. You can just kind of count this like his prayer life. And then he got the worst answer than no. Noah trusted God when the answer was wait. This is what it says in 8, 9 through 11. He waited 7 more days. So he's already been on this boat for around 200. He waited 7 more days and again sent out a dove from the ark. So he's not giving up. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there in his beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Cool, it's over. Here's an olive leaf. It's time to go. No. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. Oh, no more water, dry land. Time to go. Nope. He waited 7 more days and sent out another dove again. But this time it did not return. How easy would it have been for Noah to jump the gun? How easy would it have been for Noah to say, it's enough. I've had enough in this ark. I've had enough of this time. God, I want my life back, and I want my life back now. And you know what? There's got to be dry land out here because this dove brought back this little olive branch. So something out there is growing. So you know what, God? I am leaving. Lord, it's been a really nice voyage, but I won't. I won't trust you anymore. I got to move. That's not Noah. It says, Noah said, I can wait. How long did Noah wait? Well, it said 7 more days, but the days is not what Noah was counting on. You see, because Noah trusted God until God said when. This is what it says in Genesis chapter 8, verses 15 through 16. Then God said to Noah, Come out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons and their wives. Isn't that amazing? Noah just sat there in his ark with all of these animals and his sons and their wives, and there were no switches or video games or nothing to distract them. I wonder what they did for amusement. I guess they could have played pin the tail on the donkey a lot. But I don't know what they did, but he just sat there and they waited. And they waited until God said, now, Noah. That's a lot of trust, folks. Do you have that much trust? When your life is adrift and your life is flooded and the storms have come and you feel like everything that you ever put your faith in has been washed away, do you have enough trust in God to sit there until God says, now? Come on, we've seen it over the past few months, haven't we? We don't do this very well. what do we start doing? Well, we start making plans. We start coming up with our ideas about, hey, God, I can help you out with this. Really, I can. We start doing this, and we start doing that, and we start doing the other. And we just refuse to wait for God to say when. That's a big lesson, folks. That's that hole of trust. And you know what? When he exited the ark, Noah wasn't done with his trust. It says Noah trusted God's promise. Genesis chapter 9, verses 16 and 17. These are the verses that we kind of know Noah for, right? The little offering with the big old rainbow over his head. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant I have established between me and all of life on earth. That's a lot of trust. How many rainbows have you seen in your lifetime? It was one of those things that when we moved over the mountain, it was an awesome moment because on the other side of the mountain, just so you know, on the boring side of the mountain in Charlottesville, whenever you get a rainbow, they're always single rainbows. But there's something about the height of the mountain here when you move over here and you get here and you look up. And usually if you see one rainbow, if you look close enough, guess what? They're double rainbows. I remember the one we saw at Bud and Patty's house that night. And they're just two beautiful, bright rainbows. How many rainbows have you seen? So when you see the rainbow, do you think, thank goodness the rain is over? Or do you think, thank God I made it through the storm? Which is it? When I see the rainbow, do you think, okay, good, now it's time to do the next thing in my life. I can go back outside. I can get in the pool. I can do whatever I want to do. I can go camping. I can go to the park. I can go and do whatever I want to do because you know what? The storm is over because there's the rainbow. Or do you stop and say, well, there's the rainbow. God, thank you for remembering the promise you made to me. See, this hole of trust is where we have to start. Eventually, I've got to get my life in such a place that I am willing to trust God before, during, and after the storm. I have got to take my entire life and I've got to let it fall right back into God. You know what? That's hard. That's difficult. Because most of the time, what I do is God says, let's take it to level 2. There's nobody back there. I don't see the future. I don't see the answer. He says, fall back. And I said, I don't think so. I won't. I'm done, God. And then usually a couple days later, I come to my senses like, you know what? I probably should have just trusted God. But you do realize what happens, right? The hole is back. That hole that I tried to stuff with my religious activities, it's back. And it's back because I chose to stop trusting God. So this is where we start. And I want you to answer for yourself. You don't have to raise your hand. We're not taking a poll. There's no fill in the blank where you have to put a checklist to say, yes, you passed this test. Are you willing to trust God with your entire life? Even when he asks you to do some very difficult and complicated things. If you're not, the hole's never going to go away. You're just going to keep trying to stuff. And you're just going to keep doing the things. And you're going to say, why isn't this getting any better for me? Let me give you an answer. Because something's missing. You've got to trust God.